A Matter of Spirit is a quarterly justice journal of the Intercommunity Peace and Justice Center. This article appeared in the summer 2018 issue on the opioid epidemic. Opioids in the United States by Avery Holler. Avery Holler will graduate with her Master of Public Health from Bastyr University in June of 2018. She is currently working to empower young women through her role with the Development Office at Holy Names Academy in Seattle, Washington. The story of the opioid epidemic is ripe for film adaptation. There's crooked science, hidden agendas, blind-eyed idealists, and an overall breakdown of our fragmented U.S. medical care. Over its course, the opioid epidemic has claimed hundreds of thousands of lives and forever scarred families across the country. This isn't the first time the U.S. has encountered a drug crisis. So why are opioids getting so much attention? One reason is the incredible scale of the problem. In 2016, the Department of Health and Human Services reported that 2.1 million Americans had opioid use disorder, and 116 people died every day from an opioid-related drug overdose. Another reason is that the initial rise in opioid use broke the nightly news narrative of drug use as an inner-city problem among people of color, as the first spikes in overdose deaths were reported in rurally residing whites. And finally, the opioid epidemic is unique in that the medical establishment had a clear role in creating the crisis in opioid-related deaths. The epidemic's scattered history. In 1995, the American Pain Society pushed physicians to consider pain as a fifth vital sign. Society members were justly concerned about the lack of adequate pain treatments given the complications that can arise from ignoring pain. At the same time, Purdue Pharma was getting ready to release its new miracle pain pill, OxyContin. In 1996, amidst buzz in the medical community about pain, OxyContin hit the market, along with a comprehensive marketing campaign by Purdue Pharma. The company held all expenses paid conferences around the U.S., educating 5,000 physicians about the benefits of prescription opioids as pain treatment. Opioid prescriptions began to rise. Meanwhile, the Joint Commission, a medical standards accreditor, released new standards for pain treatment. The new standards recommended a number of pain treatments, including an endorsement of prescription opioids. Other medical associations and physicians lauded the Joint Commission for pushing pain management to a central aspect of patient care. With the blessing from the medical community, opioid prescriptions skyrocketed, quadrupling over the next 10 years. Opioids, and OxyContin in particular, addressed demand in a quick, convenient package. Furthermore, at the time of the Joint Commission's standards, opioid addiction was thought to be rare. An inaccurate study, oft-toted at Purdue Pharma conferences, claimed that the addiction rate in patients prescribed opioids was less than 1%. On the basis of this science, nurses and physicians felt confident that they were doing best by their patients. That confidence led to statements such as the following, written by an RN in 2004. Be sure your patient understands that tolerance and physical dependence are expected responses to the continued use of opioids and aren't necessarily evidence of addiction. Reassure patients that even if they develop tolerance, they'll still receive enough medication to relieve their pain and that the symptoms of physical dependence can be avoided or minimized by gradually reducing the dose over several days. The claim that patients experiencing withdrawal should calm down and get more pills feels sinister in hindsight. By the early 2000s, there were plenty of critics dubious of the miraculous opioids. They raised concerns that prescribing practices lacked the oversight necessary to prevent abuse. Critics argued that state-level prescription drug monitoring programs were needed. Without a prescription drug monitoring program, a patient would be free to go from doctor to doctor, getting as many opioid prescriptions as they wanted. Additionally, some in the medical community doubted the claims that opioids were non-addictive. In 2007, these doubters were vindicated. Purdue Pharma settled a suit in which the company admitted to falsifying safety claims. The truth is, some employees knew that OxyContin had the potential to be addictive when they put it on the market, and medical associations were hungry enough for a solution that they forewent their due diligence. And the U.S. Food and Drug Administration could have had stricter drug testing regulations in place that would have required a greater burden of proof to establish the drug's safety. And patients could have raised the alarm about the drug's strange high sooner. And. The opioid epidemic was the failure of a scattered system and a population desperate for pain relief. The epidemic today. While the 2007 Purdue Pharma suit was an enlightening moment for the medical community, it was too late to save lives. By the turn of the decade, heroin overdose deaths had spiked. Heroin is a cheaper, street-available alternative to prescription opioids. At first, it seemed the new spike in heroin deaths was unrelated to prescription opioid practices. That old study claiming 1% of prescription opioid patients go on to abuse drugs lingered. However, within a few years, it became clear that the rise in heroin use was almost directly related to the rise in prescription opioid use. Data compiled in 2015 found that 21 to 29% of patients who were prescribed opioids went on to misuse the drugs. Additionally, data collected from 2011 through 2013 at the Centers for Disease Control found that 80% of heroin users surveyed had started with prescription opioids. For patients who are vulnerable to developing addiction, the flowering of prescription opioid availability created an environment where the trusted family physician unknowingly handed over hazardous material. At first, researchers recorded the highest growth rates in opioid abuse, both prescriptions and heroin, in the rural white population. The narrative became one of a hopeless, jobless landscape outside of the U.S. cities. From 2015 to 2016, however, the rate of opioid overdose deaths among African Americans nearly doubled, with the rate of overdose deaths among Latinx Americans not far behind. Opioid overdose death rates among Native American tribal members have kept pace with white Americans, while the rates of abuse in rural areas begin to steady, urban rates of abuse are rising. New, more potent opioid drugs such as fentanyl have hit the illicit drug market in recent years. The opioid epidemic shows few signs of slowing down. Racism and the epidemic. There are several ways in which racism played a role in shaping the opioid crisis and in public response. First, it is well documented that physicians tend to undertreat pain in people of color. People of color are less likely to have their pain taken seriously by doctors and are less likely to have access to prescription services than white patients. In a case of cruel irony, this undertreatment of pain may explain the delayed rise in opioid overdoses among people of color. The drugs provided by the medical establishment simply took longer to get to patients. Second, many scholars and journalists have noted the distinctly different public discourse surrounding the opioid epidemic compared to the crack cocaine epidemic of the 1980s. In the 80s, African-American drug users were met with a tough-on-crime stance and branded as dangerous criminals. Today, white drug users are met with compassionate calls for safe injection sites as grieving family members share their stories on talk radio. After the failure of the War on Drugs and the Just Say No campaigns in the 80s and 90s, there has been much self-reflection in public health's approach to drug use. The change in public discourse is due at least in part to this self-reflection and changes over the last 30 years in how public health organizations attempt to save lives vulnerable to drug overdose, including a much greater emphasis on addiction as a diagnosable medical condition. However, there is almost no doubt that the general public's readiness to accept this change in narrative was primed by the unexpectedly white face of the opioid crisis. As rates of opioid overdose rise in all populations, it will be important for public officials, medical professionals, and news crews to equitably treat and portray all drug users. This crisis truly touches all Americans, and all Americans must have equal access to compassionate, excellent treatment. Moving forward. In March of 2018, the President of the United States declared a public health emergency regarding the opioid epidemic. While a step in the right direction, the Public Health Emergency Fund is slim. For an effective mobilization of resources, advocates must continue to fight for the declaration of a national emergency. Despite a lack of funds from the highest federal office, there are promising policies emerging at the national, state, and local levels. In April of 2018, Medicare ended coverage of long-term opioids, encouraging patients and doctors to use non-addictive strategies for pain management. That same month, the National Institute of Health, NIH, doubled its funding for opioid-related prevention. Most states have now implemented prescription drug monitoring programs, making it hard to obtain unnecessary prescription opioids. At the local level, cities and counties around the country are considering safe injection sites as well as methadone clinics. Safe injection sites are controversial because they involve decriminalizing drug use in the clinical setting. Methadone clinics are similarly controversial because they involve clinicians administering opioids to patients in active addiction. However, the promise of both options is that drug users will have a safe entree to recovery programs, as well as clinical supervision that can quickly save someone who goes into overdose. If you're looking for an action step today, call your elected representatives and ask for more funding for drug overdose prevention programs. Given the massive scale of the opioid epidemic, this is going to be a slow recovery. The good news is, learning from past drug outbreaks have given public health officials and medical staff greater wisdom about how to save lives. But greater public and congressional support is needed to kick recovery into high gear.